political commentator and investigative journalist. You're with Patrick Henningsen on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back, folks. Welcome back. I'm your host, Patrick Henningsen. This is TNT, today's News Talk. We're in hour number two of this live broadcast. Thank you, everybody in the TNT chat community, for joining us. Appreciate you guys. That's where you want to be during the live broadcast. You can access the chat room via the app, which you can download from Google Play or the App Store if you're using an iPhone. And that's a TNT kind of mothership for your smartphone. And through that, the menu, you can access all these things, including the chat room there, or go on the URL tntradio.live, lower right hand corner, red bubble. That's where you want to spend your time during the broadcast. That's where the banter is. That's where the memes are. That's where the opposition research is. We got a great audience. We got a great group of people in there. It just seems to be growing by the week. So obviously people like it in there, and we love you guys as well, keeping it alive during the live broadcast. And listen, folks, what a fantastic segment with Danny Davis, a retired lieutenant colonel. He really kind of put things in perspective, and it's great to get his perspective from inside Washington. So he's in the Beltway's vicinity there, also spending his time and his career in the U.S. military. He does know a thing or two. We appreciate him sharing that with us during that segment, especially with all that's going on. There's a lot of politics involved, and this is a big business at the end of the day. But the question is this big business benefiting the American people, or is it benefiting the deep state or the members and shareholders of a few big corporations that are in the defense industry? That's the big question. And if it's not benefiting the American people, even worse, is it actually in the U.S. national interest in the long term we're talking about? In other words, is it worth risking World War III for the sake of quarterly dividends? Does it really come down to that, or things that sort of craven at the end of the day? Some people will argue yes. We're leaving the door open for sanity, though, that some people will sort of read this in the long term. Certainly there's money to be made. Everybody can make money in this world. It's just a question of, do you want to destroy the planet in the process? That's sort of the big question. That's what we're putting out there. And we hope that people of conscience are going to make the right decisions. So it's great that we do have analysts coming on the program to talk about these issues in an honest and frank fashion. People who know, who are experienced, who have as well spent their time within these institutions and organizations, and know how they think and how the decision-making process goes. So anyway, we're going to be talking to another such person with some great experience, especially in recent years. No stranger to controversy. He's also written a fantastic book. George Papadopoulos is going to be joining us in a few minutes. We'll break and connect, hopefully, George, in just a couple of minutes, and talk about a number of big issues that are facing the United States and facing the world, for that matter. So we look forward to that conversation. But as we've said previously, the breaking story really today is that it seems like, according to reports in the Israeli press, that the United States has made a backroom deal with Israel not to strike Iran. And in return, Israel has asked for the U.S. to provide a green light for a couple of things. One is an imminent invasion of Rafah, at the Rafah border crossing there, where Palestinian occupied territories and Egypt, where all those meet, where the aid is being held up, et cetera, where 1 million plus refugees have amassed as a result of Israel's attack on Gaza over the last 6 months. So has the Biden administration given a green light to Netanyahu to go ahead, weapons free in Rafah, finish the job that they believe they've started after October 7th? Is that part of the deal? The other part of the deal, of course, is the vote in the UN Security Council. The United States will veto or abstain, possibly veto. It'll be very interesting to see the Palestinian statehood resolution there. There's other parts of this deal as well that are included in there, including the United States giving the go-ahead, the green light, or standing back of the announcement by Netanyahu in the last 24 hours that they're going to be building new settlements in Gaza. So again, the actual reason why this round of hostilities, this war, if you will, kicked off on October 7th. The actual underlying reason for it, rather than addressing that reason, we're seeing more of the same in terms of policies. So is it a case that Tel Aviv is doubling down on their initial gambit on this? And is there any chance for a sea change in thinking, for a turn in the policy, to see hopefully that things de-escalate rather than escalate? And it doesn't look like we're going to get any of that at the present moment. The only thing that has de-escalated is that Israel has not attacked or retaliated against the Iranian government for the strike on Israeli territory on April 14th, which was this past weekend. So that part seems to have paused. That's certainly a positive thing on many levels. Unfortunately, we have other things that are proceeding forward, again, that might basically guarantee they're going to have more problems down the road. And that's the kind of way we're looking at the analysis. Folks, we do our best to give a 360-degree view of the analysis and show the multiple dimensions, the political, the military, the economic as well, dimensions of all of this. These are all important, as well as a geostrategic overview, which we try to provide our listeners, our viewers on this program. That's what we aim to do here on the Patrick Henningsen Show, live and direct on TNT Monday to Fridays. And appreciate you guys joining us as well. If you're just new to the program, we hope you like it. We hope you're informed. And with any luck, with just a little bit of luck, maybe even a little bit entertained at the end of this 2-hour stint. But anyway, what we're going to do right now is take a break with the network, and we're going to set up our next segment. Looking forward to talking to George Papadopoulos, and we'll talk about his experience. We'll talk about this FISA bill, which he does know a thing or two about, as well as Biden corruption in Ukraine. I want to talk to George about that and get his opinion on what he thinks is going on that side of things. All this and more coming up in just a few minutes. I'm Patrick Henningsen, your host. We'll be right back after these messages.
TNT. Sonia Poulton.
If the British courts take the USA's poor application seriously and extradite Julian Assange, they will almost certainly have blood on their hands. Those are my words, not Stella's, although I know she thinks the same. She said so. The court has refused to address the very credible evidence that the CIA planned to kidnap and assassinate Julian Assange. We should all remember this moment the next time the UK or the USA dare to claim we are a free society while lecturing other countries about their lack of press freedoms. Julian Assange has been denied his freedom for 15 years. The entire process has been his punishment.
Sonia Poulton on today's News Talk, TNT.
The Light is Britain's far-right conspiracy theory paper spreading hate and vicious lies. No, that's what the BBC say. The Light is the only national newspaper bringing you the real news and informed opinion on what's really going on today. You can subscribe, order copies, submit articles, and read back issues on our website, thelightpaper.co.uk, and see for yourself why the establishment are so worried about the uncensored truth getting out to people every month. The Light Paper. Not far right, just right so far. thelightpaper.co.uk.
Many pollution sources can affect the air you breathe, from power plants and vehicles to dust and wildfires. Knowing more about local air quality can help you protect your health. If you're thinking about buying an air sensor, EPA has a series of videos to help you get the most out of it. Learn how EPA collects and uses regulatory data, how EPA communicates health messaging, and how to interpret the readings from your sensor. Visit epa.gov/air-sensor-toolbox.
Unbiased information.
Honest and forthright.
News without the misinformation.
It doesn't matter what side you're from. What matters is what you say, the truthfulness behind it.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back. We're now number two, this live broadcast. Appreciate you guys rejoining us. And before the break, I told you we have a special guest. We have him on the line right now. He is an author. He is a political consultant. He's much more than that, however. He's also a part of history, an important part of history. He's joining us on the live link right now, George Papadopoulos. Thank you for bringing yourself onto this program. I've got a lot of questions for you. I hope you're ready.
Thanks so much. Of course. Absolutely. Really looking forward to this.
Now, George, one of the things I wanted to talk to you about is something that popped into the media, popped into the headlines this past week about the extension of the FISA bill, the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, and what that means. I mean, this is something you have firsthand experience with. I wanted to get your comments. Were you surprised, first of all, that this was extended? A lot of Republicans, especially members of the Freedom Caucus and other people over the years, have said this is not something that we want to have, this kind of full dragnet surveillance of all American communications. I do understand in certain circumstances it's important to have this this power, this ability by the government. But in your case and other people that were caught up in the whole Russiagate farrago, kind of a different story there. What are your thoughts on this?
Yeah, Patrick, I really thought this that it was really as astonishing as it was predictable, right? This was a tool that emerged out of the ashes of 9/11, as we all know. It was designed to basically combat this so-called global war on terror. And at first, it was targeting foreign spies, foreign terrorist organizations that were trying to prevent another massive terror attack. That was the theory that went behind this. But then, of course, there's a slippery slope. Once you lose certain civil liberties, then the government wants to take more. The larger the government gets, the less rights that private citizens get. And that's just what we've seen historically from various different accounts, different type of governments. So what happened to us, of course, was an abomination. Of course, you had the intelligence agencies, not only domestic, but foreign, including the Five Eyes intelligence, the CIA, with the FBI, and big tech and the media colluding and spying and in an attempt to take down a presidential candidate and his team. So yes, like you said, in certain circumstances, it can be a helpful tool for the national security apparatus to keep the American public safe and even foreign allies safe. However, that can then be perverted, as we saw during the 2016 campaign and over the last 3 years, where it's been abused in thousands of instances against everyday Americans, some Americans who were involved or not involved on January 6th. So it was very shocking to see how the Congress decided to push this down without any real restraints.
And also, it's kind of surprising that there were a lot of Republicans that supported this extension as well, especially since what happened on January. This was definitely used as to create a huge dragnet for the January 6th sort of circus. It just became a massive dragnet. I don't know how many people that they pulled in, arrested, or imprisoned. How many they've indicted? Because it's not just the target, isn't it? It's they can then identify how many hops away from that target people they communicate with, and that communicate with those people. Then you're into sort of the third order of surveillance on that. That's the big problem here, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. So you have the principal target, which basically has no rights whatsoever. There's no privacy. The moment there's an individual who's targeted with a FISA, that essentially means they're under 24-hour surveillance. Their home is bugged, their phone is bugged, their emails history is checked going back potentially decades. Their bank records are subpoenaed. They are essentially naked without any due process, any rights whatsoever, because as I mentioned at the beginning of our conversation, that tool was designed to combat terrorism, to combat global nefarious criminal organizations and people that were attempting to commit harm against the United States, not against MAGA grandmas, not against 22-year-old raucous protesters who devolved into riots on January 6th, and certainly not against a presidential candidate, his team or her team, and a sitting president of the United States of America. So once those people are targeted for, you know, extermination, you're absolutely correct. Then you have this jump where you can then spy on at least three people closest to that individual's orbit without them even having anything to do with any wrongdoing or any suspicion of wrongdoing. So you just cast this massive net. You sweep up all of these people. You usurp their civil liberties. You eviscerate the Constitution in the process. And the end result is a lack of confidence in the institutions. The American people today view the FBI in a mass quantity as some sort of dangerous organization. You have members of Congress asking it for it to be defunded and potentially replaced. You have active U.S. presidential candidates, not only President Trump, but Vivek Ramaswamy, others, calling for it to be replaced. So we are in uncharted territory here, and it's all because of the self-inflicted wounds of the intelligence agencies.
And I've got your book here, Deep State Target, folks. And I know this is not a new book, George. It's been out for a while, but I think this is really essential reading. This thing reads like a spy thriller, of course, but this is actually your experience, your firsthand experience. There's a name that comes up in here that's actually very central to the whole FISA issue. And that is, I believe, a lawyer and FBI person named Kevin Kleinsmith that you had direct interactions with here, who eventually, I think, was let go of the FBI and was sentenced to probation for altering an email in order to obtain a FISA application. I mean, that's the type of abuse within institutions. That's the worst sum of all fears, isn't it? That an institution will become so politicized that people would go so far as to forge or alter evidence to obtain this type of a warrant. It shows you how the weaponization of agencies and institutions can happen. I mean, we need no better example than your case and the case of this FISA warrant with Kleinsmith. But what are your thoughts on that? Were you surprised when that scandal popped up with Kevin Kleinsmith?
Well, first and foremost, yes, Kevin Kleinsmith was not only the FBI attorney in charge of my so-called case, he was actually the key attorney that was running the entire Crossfire Hurricane operation from Comey and then on Mueller. I mean, I met Kleinsmith. I had the unfortunate, opportunity to meet this person when the Mueller thing was completely in full throttle. So he ends up altering emails in order to continue the FISA process and to lie to the FISA court. So he himself, along with his team, defrauded the FISA court. That's why he was, he pled guilty. He's now a felon during the whole Durham testimony. But what's even more disturbing than Kleinsmith is what we learned about Charles McGonigal. Charles McGonigal was the head of the New York Counterintelligence Division of the FBI. He was Peter Strzok's boss. He was Lisa Page's boss. He actually ran this entire operation. And he was just sentenced to 6 years in prison. And even worse than this, I know your viewers are probably thinking, how could it possibly get worse than this? We've now just recently learned that this thing did not spontaneously erupt through a justified investigation in July of 2016, but was a coordinated, pre-planned operation run by the CIA and Five Eyes going back to March of 2016. So this scandal, I mean, they use this a lot, the biggest scandal in political history. This certainly is the biggest political scandal in modern American history, and we're still seeing the fallout today.
And I might add that your entrapment, I think it's safe to call it entrapment, but how they targeted you, which you outline in your book, Deep State Target, you were one of the first sort of pieces that they needed to get into place to build their Jenga tower on Russiagate, which I thought was interesting. Yourself and Carter Page, and a few other Trump campaign advisors. And with that, they were able to kind of fabricate this whole Russiagate narrative at the beginning. And then by the time it sort of gotten to full steam, it was out of control at that point. Nothing was going to stop it. And still, I don't know how many Americans still believe that Russia somehow helped Donald Trump get elected in 2016. But I bet if you did polling, George, probably it'd be close to 50% of the country. Unfortunately, but that's how effective that whole operation was in terms of propaganda. So, I mean, you can see the motivation behind this, but it is pretty frightening when you look at how much coordination there was with all of these different agencies, the press, as you said, George, big tech, as well as the political parties and their role in this. But how much of this is going to affect the coming election cycle? I mean, are you afraid that some of these issues are unresolved? I'm talking about this issue of big tech censorship going into sort of hyperdrive in September, like it did before 2020. I'm talking about election integrity. I'm talking about Russiagate type fear mongering to sort of mire the Trump campaign into some other sort of narrative in the run up to November. What do you envision over the next 8 months? What do you think is a potential risk?
Well, a little bit of everything that you just mentioned, and just let's look at a couple facts. X, formerly Twitter, ever since Elon Musk purchased it, has been under attack by the Biden administration. It's now been banned in Pakistan. You have this massive issue going on in Brazil right now with X. I've been on various spaces recently on X, talking with Bolsonaro's people, his son. The situation is at a critical stage there, where they're trying to suppress dissent writ large. And we've seen it in the United States as well. I mean, the Democrats, Patrick, have actually normalized selective and politically motivated targeting of dissent writ large. It's not simply a former president. You have Catholics in America under attack. The white Christian male is under attack in the United States today. You have school teachers being deemed potential threats for questioning bizarre agendas being promulgated down their children's throats. So you have that aspect, which, if you want to call that the MAGA umbrella, which are over 75 million Americans. Then, of course, you have the looming so-called Russia threat. We had this bizarre narrative coming out of Congress where the Russians were building spacecraft and nuclear weapons in outer space in order to attack us. You have this push to continue to finance Ukraine because Russia is going to overtake Europe and attack the United States. Now you have this looming World War III situation between Israel, Iran, Gaza, Taiwan, potentially the open border in the United States. And you put all of this together with Donald Trump leading in the polls, even with the various indictments and a potential conviction, which I think he's going to be convicted in New York, which I don't think it really matters. I think that's an unfortunate recipe for either a black swan type of events or something to potentially try and even cancel the upcoming elections based on all of these various variables, because I believe that Donald Trump is too big of a threat to expose what they did to him in 16, what potentially happened in 2020, and what they might even be trying to pull today. And this, the last thing I'll say about this, they weren't held accountable in 2016 for what they did. They did it again in 2020 by suppressing the Hunter Biden laptop story with the CIA agents. And who knows what they're up to right now.
No, and that's the big fear, that the establishment doesn't want to correct the narrative. And that narrative that you said extends right back, let's just say, from 2016 till now. And they'll do anything to avoid having that reckoning take place. And I think that's the point that you make, and also other people who were kind of targeted and victimized in that political circus, the unfortunate political circus known as Russiagate and beyond, is that you have an establishment, and in this case, it's the Democratic Party establishment. It could end up being another party's establishment in the future if the same abuses were allowed to happen. But the point is, they're willing to undermine the very fabric of the United States political system of checks and balances and politicize it to such a degree with lawfare and everything else, the DOJ being weaponized. They're willing to sacrifice all of those essential building blocks that make America resilient, strong, and a dynamic democracy, just to keep somebody out of office, whether they like Trump or not, whatever their preference politically is, should be beside the point. They're taking, potentially threatening the stability of America, the American political system. I think so. You're making this point, as well as others who have been caught in this. And that's a message I think that's really important. It's a tough message to get across, though, George, because things are so polarized politically right now, especially in Washington and throughout the country. What are your thoughts on, if people can understand the importance of having our system of checks and balances, our constitutional republic functioning? How important is this?
There's nothing more dangerous or corrosive to our functioning as a republic in the United States than a two-tier justice system. Now, and the reason I say this is because I'm somebody who would like to see America united. I don't like this polarization. I think it's dangerous. I think Cicero was absolutely right that if you have corruption from within, that's the only way you could take down an empire like the United States. And it's not going to come from an external force. So I think the United States today is at the precipice. I don't think we've ever been this divided. It really all started with Obama, this war on police, this war between black and white, brown and white, and all these bizarre agendas that he was pushing. Then, of course, you had Trump come in, and how the media and the intel agencies and everything we're talking about here swarmed him, and that caused different grievances from January 6th. And now Biden, of course, whether you're pushing various agendas on Easter, to waging lawfare against Trump, to calling 75 million Americans who voted for Trump as terrorists, that is just a recipe to instigate conflict. So I think if you're a Democrat today and you're laughing and you're grinning and saying, "Oh, I'm glad they're getting our opponents," once the precedent has been set, and you could go after a president, a former president, you could raid that person, you could indict that person, you can use Five Eyes and the CIA to spy on a person, you could go after everyday Americans just for voting a particular way. What's going to happen when the Republicans get back in power? They're just going to flip the hammer and hit you on the side of the head. And then we're going to be in this very vicious cycle. So there's nothing to be happy about this situation. I'm a staunch Republican. I've been on, especially a MAGA Republican. And I certainly would not even like to see that happen to everyday Democrat citizens in America simply because they believe in whatever they believe in. Now, if people like Biden and Obama committed crimes, which I believe they did, especially regarding Russiagate and using Five Eyes in the CIA like Brennan, I absolutely believe when Trump is back in office, use your attorney general, indict them, put them in front of Congress, put them in front of courts, let the American people see what they did and hold them accountable so that we could finally repair this country. Because if not, the FBI is going to continue to have absolutely abysmal approval ratings by conservatives. People are going to believe we live in a kangaroo court system, and that is not going to allow this system to continue. So that's really what I would say about the current state of affairs and unfortunately what potentially might happen if Trump gets back into office on the other end.
Yeah, and I can kind of see that. If Donald Trump is successful, one of the things that has to be a priority is cleaning up the FBI and the DOJ. And you're going to have to clean house at that point. But the press, the Democratic Party, going to view that as Trump's authoritarianism, Trump's fascism. Look, he's fired the FBI director. And I think what we've seen is totally beyond the pale in terms of the politicization of our justice system in the last 12 months, with the amount of lawfare that's been directed at the presumptive GOP nominee, which anybody could say is election interference. I mean, that's the actual definition of election interference, Latin American style, Banana Republic style. I mean, even so, what we've seen, George, this by Banana Republic standards, this is extreme lawfare that we've seen in the last 12 months directed against Donald Trump. I mean, how do you clean this up?
Yeah, certainly it's going to take, I've been saying this a lot recently because I've been asked a lot about his cabinet choices and, what a new Trump administration might look like. I believe in a normal election, your vice presidential pick is probably the most important, at least symbolically, for the voters. I think symbolically and for practical purposes, his most important cabinet picks are in order: his attorney general, his FBI director, and his CIA director, and who he chooses to put at the office of the Director of National Intelligence, because the American people, especially conservatives today, they believe the two biggest issues we're facing as a nation are the open border and the weaponization of justice in America. And then I think the economy might be tied with one, with the second or the first. But those three issues today are the most important issues facing conservative voters in America. And I think Trump, in order to ameliorate the situation, he's going to have to put not only patriotic type individuals at those leadership positions, but also constitutionalists. We've seen him pick those type of individuals at the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court has essentially saved the rule of law and pushing back against this encroaching Democrat takeover in the United States. So you have to put those type of people in office. You have to tell the American people, this is who I have in mind. And hopefully that his polls keep going up. People see through the lawfare. He raises money. He gets elected. And we put some sanity back into this very unstable country right now.
No, I think a lot of people want to see that happen, not just Republicans, Libertarians, and even a lot of Democrats. Quite frankly, if you look at the polling of Joe Biden, it's one of the lowest for an incumbent president in living memory. That said, I want to talk about the issue of Ukraine and this connection, this nexus with the Bidens internationally. I want to talk about that after the break. Get your thoughts and your opinions on this issue and a few other things. I'm with George Papadopoulos. He's an author. He is also a political consultant, and he's talking to us about the state of America right now in Washington, all this and more on the other side. I'm Patrick Henningsen. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Hi. I'm your retirement fear, but don't be scared. You're still in pre-retirement.
Pre-retirement? Does that mean I have more time to plan?
Precisely. Here, this is pretirement.org.
Retirement savings options.
Oh.
Potential tax breaks.
Yep. Boo.
Oh, I could build up savings for my side hustle. This isn't scary. I'm doing it.
You got this.
Visit thisispretirement.org for free resources to help you customize your action plan.
Patrick Henningsen and TNT.
All right, folks, welcome back to this live broadcast. We're in the final segment of the final hour here on TNT, Today's News Talk. Very pleased to be joined by an amazing guest, George Papadopoulos. He is the author of Deep State Target. Ladies and gentlemen, this is definitely one for your reading list. I highly recommend it. It's gripping. It's a incredible read, George. I mean, what was amazing, there's one quote in there, George, that really kind of hit hard. And when one of the agents turned to you during one of these raids, I think, or when you were detained, said, "This is what happens when you work for Trump." I mean, that's an incredible thing in itself.
Yeah, that, and you know, and I even testified, because a lot of people actually asked me, "Were you serious when you wrote that, George?" And I said, I actually testified under oath to Congress about that exact quote. And obviously all of those recordings with the FBI are there. Now, the reason I believe that the FBI told me this after a very violent arrest experience, which wasn't even necessary. I mean, it was just like a disgusting intimidation tactic and almost like a Stasi type of maneuver. So I don't think they ever thought my story would go public. I think that they believe this would be a one day news story. I think they believe that Trump would last probably 1 or 2 months. He wouldn't know what hit him. The media, big tech, the agencies would all collude in tandem. No one would fight back. Trump would be gone. And all of this would be swept underneath the rug of history, and history would have been rewritten as we speak. And that probably would have had major implications, not only for the war in Ukraine, the war with Russia. Who knows what would have happened? But that's what they told me. And you're absolutely right. That happened during my arrest in Washington.
Yeah, and the other one was, this is what happens when you work for the Russians. So sort of a double barrel attack there. But on this issue of Russia and Ukraine, and it's very interesting. It's very interesting. Some of the recent revelations that are coming out now regarding Hunter Biden about Burisma Holdings, which is the oil and gas company in Ukraine, which Hunter Biden had a very lucrative and quite cushy, let's say, board position there while his father was vice president. Clear conflict of interest, and this whole issue of the Biden corruption, or what I like to call the family enterprise in Ukraine. It is pretty incredible, as well as some of the revelations that Hunter Biden was kind of tangential to CIA activity as well. Doesn't surprise me at all. I'm sure his old man set that up for him to give him a little bit of extra layer of protection, probably as an informant or something like this. But what are your thoughts on this? How deep does this issue go?
Yeah, look, the Biden, syndicate, let's call it the syndicate, sells nothing, manufactures nothing, and the entire product is the Biden family name. Now, that's actually a very dangerous situation for the American people and for the United States national security, not for the Biden family, because the Biden family can enrich themselves off of Joe Biden as vice president, and of course as president of the United States and a long-serving senator with massive connections in the Democrat Party. So when Biden himself as vice president is openly extorting and laughing about bribing people to fire prosecutors that are investigating the same exact company, the corrupt company Burisma, that hired his drug addict son with no natural gas energy experience, $80,000 a month, while he was vice president, and while Joe Biden was the point man on Ukraine affairs, that's certainly a massive scandal that I don't believe the Democrats ever wanted coming out. And they never wanted the Hunter laptop story to be verified. We obviously saw the CIA interfere in the 2020 election by suppressing it, calling it Russian disinformation, completely discrediting not only themselves, but various newspapers that went along with it. And now what we have is a full-on war between Russia, Ukraine, and a time when the United States has earmarked over $200 billion in taxpayer money, potentially hundreds of American troops on the ground, at least operators, some who might have died, might have not. And this, you know, potential nuclear catastrophe, in my opinion, which is all designed to cover up for these corrupt activities of the Biden family, which are now at the center of impeachment inquiries in the United States.
What's incredible about this, the first impeachment against Trump, if you remember that one coming, about the Zelensky phone call and the whistleblower, Eric Ciramella, who was Adam Schiff's sort of prized whistleblower at the time. Now, based on recent revelations we see in Real Clear Investigations this week, Dan Bongino has also reported on this with his program, that this person was deeply involved with Joe Biden on Ukraine policy, going right back a number of years, including while he was vice president, including knowledge that the Hunter Biden Burisma might be bad optics. There's a lot of new revelations from information that's been recently put out. It looks like, George, that the entire impeachment effort against Trump, the first one, was designed basically to protect Joe Biden. Had nothing to do with Donald Trump at all. It was a whole facade that was erected to protect Joe. And I will even go further, George, is that the push to make Joe Biden the Democratic nominee was to protect the Obama administration and their legacy. They had to contain all of this stuff behind this giant facade. Behind it is an absolute cornucopia of corruption during the Obama administration while Joe Biden was vice president. That's what it's starting to look like now. I know a lot of people suspected that might be the case at the time, but now we're starting to see the receipts come out. And the recent revelations from Andre Derkash, who Simona Maggianti, your wife, who's also a journalist, did a tremendous interview where a lot of this information, additional information, has come out in the meantime. The picture does not look good at all. What are your thoughts on where that story's at?
Yeah, certainly. Simona's done incredible work with interviewing, Derkash and others in Ukraine that really highlighted a lot of what you just explained. And what the Democrats and the Biden syndicate and the Obama people have actually done is a masterclass in projection. They wanted to cover up their misdeeds by projecting this onto Trump and onto his associates and onto the Republican Party writ large. It failed because, as I explained earlier in the last segment, we fought back during the Russia collusion stuff. Trump fought back. And Mueller collapsed. If you look at Mueller's testimony or just his legacy at this point, he's a disgraced, potentially demented old man that's not just me saying it, that's basically what was written about him. That's somebody who could not even conduct his own so-called investigation. And I've always said that Mueller was not there to investigate. He was there to cover it all up. That's why you had the whole situation with the Mueller team wiping their BlackBerries, why you had the Mueller team attempting to silence witnesses, silence people like myself so we couldn't talk others. It all failed. And now you have the Ukraine situation where Trump and Congress is investigating all of this stuff. People like Jamie Comer, others. I've always said, yes, the Hunter Biden tax situation is important. The key person that they have to be investigating is Joe Biden. But some Republicans don't want to take this farther. They don't want to take this to the impeachment level. They want to continue just to kind of keep this on a simmer instead of holding these people accountable. So I think Congress has to continue to investigate. They need to showcase to the American people what they have found. They need to bring people like Durkesh and others who have inside information to testify to Congress, whether it's via satellite or in person, and get this out for the American people to finally see with 6 or 7 months to go before the election. Because if this stuff is suppressed, Patrick, we are once again going to be beholden to the U.S. intelligence agencies and the media putting their fingers on not only the truth, but our electoral process and choosing who they want to be leaders and not the American people. So information is paramount, and this has to come out there. And the only way to do it is by Congress doing their job, journalists like my wife, Simona, doing her job, you doing your job, having your great show, and others. And I think as a team, we will get the truth out there.
Well, you bring up a good point. You have potential fountain of information and knowledge like Andrei Durkesh, Konstantin Kulik, Viktor Shokin himself, Alexander Dubinsky, who's currently in prison, being held up, it looks like as a political prisoner. All these people could basically shed light on all of these corruption issues regarding Ukraine while Joe Biden was vice president, Hunter Biden. And they have the power in Washington to subpoena them, to organize their testimonies. Like you said, doesn't need to be done in person, George. It could be done remotely or through intermediaries. So all that information is there with these key witnesses. All it takes, though, is the political will to make that happen. I think the Republicans could do it if they pushed a little bit more on this. But the question is, are there people that don't want those facts to come out, George?
Yeah, I'll just give a very interesting example about this. The so-called credible FBI informant, Smirnov. He was paid over $1 million by the FBI, highly credible for over a decade. Yet the moment he begins to relay some of this type of information we're talking about, he gets caught off guard. He's indicted. He pleads not guilty, by the way. And in America, at least in America that I grew up in, you have due process and you're assumed innocent before proven guilty. He's decided to say, I'm not guilty. I don't know what these people are talking about. And now they've rearrested him so that he can't talk. And now they've decided that they're going to push his trial all the way until after the 2024 election. So I think when you combine that type of suppression, the type of actors that were involved here, including our own FBI, the CIA, and Five Eyes, regarding the 2016 campaign and the 2020 suppression, this might be a potato too hot for even Congress and Republicans to handle. And they may not want to, blow everything up. They might not want to tell the American people, hey, did you know your government's corrupt? Hey, did you know the billions of dollars that your intel agencies, the FBI, the CIA get was used to target you and a president and interfere in our elections? What would that mean to the system? Unfortunately for them, that's exactly what did happen. And it will take certain congressmen with gumption to allow this testimony and these facts to get out there. You had people like Matt Gaetz, Congressman Gaetz, during the testimony of Durham, push back against Durham, trying to stonewall, cover things up. You now have Jim Jordan demanding documents from the CIA linking Five Eyes to Obama. We don't know where those documents are. If Congress has decided to follow up with that, this is what has to happen. And the only way to do it is to keep pressure on Congress. And if we forget about these type of stories, if we forget about these witnesses, then of course Congress would be no happier than to sweep this underneath the rug of history, continue to get their big paychecks in Washington, wine and dine with the lobbyists, and get out after 2 to 4 years and have a nice retirement. But that's not what you go to Congress for. You go to Congress to do a job.
No, it isn't the case. I know that the Biden corruption story is being cast by a lot of mainstream media outlets, certainly by Democrats, as a politicized witch hunt against Joe Biden and his civilian son, who's not political, etc. But this really kind of goes right to the core of national security, because if you remember, the whole basis of the Russiagate plot is that Donald Trump was compromised, that Donald Trump was being, marionetted by the Russians. But isn't it a case, George, that with this story with Ukraine, you could very well have a situation where Biden administration, Joe Biden himself, is compromised, can have his strings pulled by Kiev in this case? Because actually, one of the revelations from Simona Mangianti's interview with Andrei Durkesh was that the Durkesh tapes which have the recording of Biden and Poroshenko talking about firing Viktor Shokin to keep him from investigating Burisma, that those tapes were being put out by Zelensky and Yermak from the president of Ukraine's office to possibly, it looks like, George, possibly to get leverage over the Biden administration. Look at how much money is pouring into Ukraine right now. I mean, is this not a potential national security crisis here? And shouldn't I think lawmakers be looking at that aspect of it, maybe?
Well, I think that corrupt companies and, you know, high-level Ukrainian officials, you know, should really teach at the Wharton School of Finance or Harvard Business School to teach about what it means for a return on investment. You give a couple million dollars to a guy like Hunter Biden, you feed him with, you know, some drugs or whatever he was up to over there, his business partners. And what do you get in return? You get the prosecutor fired that was investigating your corruption in order for you to continue to, you know, allocate billions to yourself in offshore companies. And then should war ever erupt with Russia, which, you know, we all expected something to happen under Biden, especially after the abysmal Afghanistan withdrawal, his weakness, his meekness that he's just projected onto the global stage. Then he said, hey, we might have something on your son. We probably do. So now either you send the money, you send the arms, you potentially put your own men and women in harm's way, and you upend the European security architecture for us, or we're going to expose you and potentially have you impeached and convicted in the Senate and the House for bribery or extortion or a high crime. And I think that's exactly what happened. So basically, you give a couple million, you get $200 billion in return, and you potentially have now Ukraine, at least the Western parts, coming under some sort of control of Poland, NATO acceptance in the West, and Zelensky, you know, enriching himself, his wife continuing to do her shopping sprees on the Champs-Élysées in Paris, buying various mansions around the world.
Had a little technical issue there. Our guest, George Papadopoulos, right in midstream. We had a little bit of a line interruption, kind of interesting. The Zoom connection froze. We're having trouble getting back in touch with him. We'll hopefully keep trying. If we get him back in the next few minutes, we'll be gladly reconnecting George Papadopoulos. He was getting right down to the core issue, though. And the core issue is that this whole issue of Biden in Ukraine is about the potential for the presidency being compromised by a foreign government. That very thing that they decried about Donald Trump, that he was somehow under the thumb of Vladimir Putin, none of that was actually true. It was all proven to be a hoax. Russiagate is a hoax by every single measure. But now you have the situation where a country, smaller country like Ukraine, could have leverage over the president of the United States, and not just the president of the United States, but his entire party, and with that, the entire Democratic administration and the deep state, the permanent state. So it's about protecting the legacy, not just of Joe Biden and his family, but the Democratic Party, the Obama administration, you know, the entire liberal establishment, including the deep state members of that establishment in the United States. That's how you get groupthink. That's how you have the entire establishment, all the institutions, the press, the media, academia, all moving in one direction, moving as one unified entity into a direction politically in order to keep this narrative going. And that's exactly where we're at right now. And I will even go so far as to say the lawfare which has been deployed against former President Donald Trump is part of that effort. It is part of that effort to maintain and to preserve the flagging reputation of the Biden dynasty, as well as the Obama political dynasty, and with that, the entire Democratic Party establishment. And let's be clear, folks, they're willing to pull out all the stops. They're willing to break all the rules. They're willing to destroy institutions from the inside in order to preserve that, to keep that face-saving exercise going. So in order to preserve their legacy, they're willing to destroy the fabric of the country in the process. And I'll go even further, and maybe this is a topic for another discussion in a future program, but how far would they go How far would they go? Would they go so far as to break the system in a general election and to do it so blatantly and obviously that it could potentially trigger civil unrest? Are they willing to go that far to protect the reputation of a political dynasty? That's the question. That would be a very unfortunate episode in American history if that is the case. Certainly, we saw with the weaponization of the justice system and the FBI with the whole January 6th debacle, a total political circus. It wasn't an insurrection. You want to see a real insurrection, it can show you other examples of that around the world, but that definitely wasn't it. Bunch of MAGA supporters taking selfies in Capitol Hill, hardly an insurrection, no chance of overthrowing anything, okay, other than the sort of headlines on the 7 o'clock news. But now you have a situation with all that weaponization. That's nothing. Imagine actual civil unrest. Will they go that far in order to preserve these narratives? And that is a very dangerous cabal, if that's indeed what they plan to do, what they intend to do and hope to do. But anyway, these are the questions that we're asking on this program, and we appreciate you joining us. Big thank you, of course, to George Papadopoulos, a powerful segment, no doubt, and Daniel Davis, host of The Deep Dive with Lieutenant Colonel Danny Davis, and as well as Basil Valentine in the first hour. This has been a blockbuster program. Once again, we have over-delivered. Tomorrow, we'll try to match it and take it to another level. That's what we do at this show, and we appreciate your listenership here on TNT Today's News Talk. I'm Patrick Henningsen, your host. Stick around. State of the Nation coming up after this. Stay on TNT Today's News Talk. I'll see you guys tomorrow. Take care.